Calcio Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the Friday episode of the Calcio Land Podcast. So today, this is technically episode 400 of those we've released on all platforms. So I want to thank the many people who have been listening for quite a few of these. You know, I'd like to think that out of 400, we had a couple that were pretty good. So I want to thank everyone that came on the journey with us so far. So today we have the last weekend of Serie A action coming up. So we're going to make some game picks with our friend Thousand Names. I haven't looked at them yet. Very curious to see what he has. We have a superb guest for episode 400. I brought on my good friend Marco Messina from Italian Football TV and Juve's official Twitch account. So we took a deep dive on Juve with Marco. We haven't talked about Juve with a guest in months, so that was a lot of fun. You'll hear that at the end, available to all. And of course, we have a section of the pod just for our patrons. But before we get to all that, I'm joined by our dear friend, producer, co-host of the show, Alex Goldberg, who is on pins and needles for the end of Chelsea's season. But Alex, let me distract you a little bit here. You and I have obviously been covering Calcio for 4 years now. You have kind of been the outsider getting familiar with the crazy world of Serie A. And I have to say, for the last weekend of the season, man, did Serie A come through with some crazy stories. It's like, you know how in The Wire, a lot of times the craziest stuff happened in the next to last episode, and then in the last episode, they dealt with the aftermath. Maybe it's a little bit of that. So, Alex, let me present to you these three stories that happened in Serie A this week, and you can tell me which one is your favorite as far as Italian soccer go. So let's start with Torino president Caido. Huge game between Torino and Lazio earlier this week, which was a makeup game from earlier in the season. Torino clinch salvation with a draw against Lazio. But that did not stop Torino's president Caido from accusing Immobile, who of course used to play for Torino and was great there, of trying too hard in that match. He said he could see blood in his eyes and how determined he was. And mind you, Caido accused Immobile of trying too hard in a match, which in and of itself is absolutely ludicrous. But even better, this was after Immobile missed the penalty kick in said match. So that is story number one. Then we have story number two, which was really, really bizarre. Scamacca's dad, and Scamacca's the striker, who is a Genoa owned by Sassuolo, who came up on Roma's youth system. His father broke into Roma's training facility wearing a Sassuolo sweatshirt, then starting vandalizing and seriously damaging the cars of various Roma directors, and then supposedly demanding to talk to Bruno Conti, which was a former Roma player legend who's a director there. So we had that, him vandalizing Roma's training facility, and poor Scamacca, the player, having to say that he really doesn't have much relationship with his father. And then we close it with Benevento's president, who is so upset with his players for collapsing and getting relegated, which, you know, in January seemed incredibly far-fetched. And he is forcing his players for the last game of the season, which is in Turin, very far from Benevento, to travel by bus for 12 hours. So, Alex, these were the three storylines going into the weekend. Which one is the most Serie A to you of these three?
Wow. What a fun trio of little stories there, honestly. They're all just a bit different as well. Well, I will say, that's just a little extreme from the Benevento president. Like, you weren't on the pitch yourself, my friend. So, yeah, maybe like you said, David, earlier in the season, it looks like they wouldn't get relegated. But still, at the end of the day, if I'm taking a step back from it, I wouldn't be too surprised with Benevento getting relegated. So, do they really need to travel on a team bus for 12 hours for their last game? Bit harsh. Oof. The Sassuolo striker's father vandalizing the training facility is pretty comical to me, although then I kind of feel bad, like you said, for Scamacca himself having to speak on it, especially if he doesn't really have a relationship with his father all that much. But I think the one that takes the cake for me is Ciro Immobile being accused of trying too hard. Like, what are we doing here? Honestly, David, I think the number one thing that upsets me in any sport is a player not trying hard enough. Like, that is the thing that really grinds my gears. And I've noticed, like, all the players I like now, for the most part, are known to be really hard workers, like a Mason Mount or someone like that. And I've always kind of liked Ciro Immobile from afar. And by the way, isn't it common knowledge that any time in any sport, when a player faces his former team, he might rev it up even more? And the instance that he's using this to reference is the penalty? Like, a sequence where actually effort isn't even that obvious on a penalty? I mean, what a ridiculous accusation, honestly. And it's so funny because your question to me after you read me all three of these was which one of these is like super calcio or just the ridiculous Serie A storyline. And when you were speaking, I was just quickly, I couldn't believe my ears on the Immobile thing. So I quickly searched in some keywords on Twitter. I found your tweet, but I found a couple other tweets as well saying, could there be anything more calcio than Ciro Immobile being accused of trying too hard? So it's just a ridiculous phrase. Like, imagine my mom, who was always really upset with maybe my lack of effort in school. Like, imagine me getting scolded for trying too hard in math class the next day if I was trying to get a better grade. Nah, that takes the cake. That really takes the cake for me. So yeah, I'm gonna say Immobile being accused of trying too hard against his former team, and it's literally after he missed the penalty, which is probably like the worst example of someone trying too hard. So those are all quite ridiculous and really a fun way to end the season. But yeah, I'll go with that. I'll go with that for sure.
Yeah, no, I agree. That is the best one. On top of that, then Kaido accused Immobile of playing the first game earlier in the season when he had supposedly COVID, which Lazio was reportedly covering up. So yeah, that was really quite the story. So Alex, let's talk a little bit about the coaching carousel, but you know, before we look at it more as the aspect in Serie A, you know, earlier this week, and we're recording this Friday morning, so things may change by the time you hear it, we had Di Marzio reporting that Allegri is in pole position for the Real Madrid job. Fabrizio Romano is maybe positioned it maybe a little bit differently, saying that Allegri is one of the three finalists, with Raul being the other big name. So, Alex, does it surprise you to hear Allegri being linked to Real Madrid as a finalist for the job?
No, it definitely doesn't, because I just feel like, knowing Allegri from his time at Juve, it was pretty common thought that Allegri was really a guy that was made for ready-made squads ready to contend.
Yeah.
Squads with plenty of players on high wages, plenty of players with a heck of a lot of experience, plenty of players that are sometimes bigger than the club themselves. I mean, not to Ronaldo's extent, but I mean, you said it so brilliantly, David, on the pod for years and probably before the pod, but Conte with Juve was the guy to take Juve from A to B, be with them during some very unique times, you could say. And then Allegri, once Juve got even more serious, just as a squad structure thing, Allegri was the guy to take them from B to C. And when I analyze Allegri and Real Madrid, I just kind of want to forget about Zidane, because Zidane has just been such a unique guy for Real Madrid, where
yeah,
he obviously went right into the job pretty much. I mean, he was a brand new manager, so to speak, and he fit well there for reasons that are really hard to replicate, like really hard to replicate. Obviously,
yeah,
he just has yeah, such a name and pedigree that he carries with him, but have you ever seen a guy accomplish what he did as a manager, but seemingly be either on the hot seat or just doubted every minute? Like, Zidane literally won three Champions Leagues in a row, and he was doubted every minute. And it always felt like, ooh, two bad games in a row for Real Madrid, and he could be out. So he's his own specific case. But I actually do think that Allegri is probably one of the most stable hirings that Real Madrid could do. There's nothing stable about Real Madrid. There's nothing stable about Florentino Perez, like nothing. But I do feel like Allegri is just such a logical link, at least, because he's kind of made to manage squads of Real Madrid's pedigree. And I would assume Real Madrid would want to stabilize things a little bit. And with Allegri, I just don't see him being a disaster. So I see him being closer to a success than a disaster. So if anything, he keeps kind of, even from a manager's perspective, the pedigree of the club high. So maybe other players would want to come there. And I think he will have a good balance. I mean, he's known the pressure from Juve, where they were like, the expectation is to win the league. But also, the growing expectation is to go really far in the Champions League and win it. I mean, that's going to be the exact same, at least, thing said to him if he were to get the Real Madrid job. So I'm not at all surprised by it, because it just seems too logical, especially since Allegri has now been without a job for just a little bit now. So, yeah, David, I'll just turn it around on you now and say, if Allegri does go to Real Madrid, let's tie it back to Serie A. Where does that leave Juve with their coach search?
Yeah, it's fascinating because there are quite a few dominoes here. So let's start with Zidane to Juve, which a lot of people would say, oh, you know, that makes a lot of sense, especially if Allegri goes there. Zidane obviously was a Juve player, has been linked to them for a long time. It's a relationship with Ronaldo. It makes a lot of sense. I will say this. It's much less far-fetched to me than Guardiola was 2 years ago, without a doubt. If you told me that this summer now we're going to go through Zidane to Juve, I would say to me that sounds much more realistic that it could happen other than Guardiola. But I still think it's quite unlikely for a variety of reasons. Di Marzio reported that Zidane, really the job at he kind of wants long-term is the France national team job. I think you said it very well. Like, it's a unique situation for Zidane at Real Madrid, unique qualifications. You know, he does have a Juve pedigree, which helps. Juve typically goes with Italian managers. In my lifetime, the exception was Deschamps, who, of course, played for Juve. And interestingly, Zidane would like to follow in his footsteps at on France. So I don't think there's a huge chance of that happening. Zidane has an enormous salary. We know Juve, with or without Champions League, they definitely have to be careful with finances, even if they do make it to the Champions League. And keep in mind, right now, Sarri is still under contract for next season. And I will say, and we got into it with Marco Messina, so I won't step on that too much. You know, it's amazing how much winning changes everything. And look, at the beginning of the season, as you told the Juve fan, you know, this season we're going to win the Super Cup, we're going to win the Coppa Italia, but we're going to go into the last match of the season not sure if we're going to the Champions League. I have a hard time thinking that there'd be any Juve fan that would have said, you know what, that sounds like a successful season to me. But winning and momentum, you know, can change things. I posed the question, do you see any scenario of Pirlo coming back next season to Juve? And I did get a lot of responses. And I think a lot of them came down to, if you tell me Zidane or Allegri are coming, then yeah, I definitely don't want Pirlo. But if we are talking someone like Simone Inzaghi, Gattuso, Spalletti, and I think Spalletti is maybe closer to the Zidane Allegri category. So let's say Gattuso and Simone Inzaghi. A lot of people are like, you know what? If that's the alternative, I'd rather keep Pirlo. And while I can kind of understand that train of thought, my comeback to that is I'm pretty confident that if Gattuso and Simone Inzaghi had been Juve's coaches all season, I don't know if they win the Scudetto, but I certainly don't think they are in doubt of getting into top four. So to me, it ultimately comes down to, if you want to keep Pirlo, to me, the question you have to ask yourself, have you seen enough to believe that this time next year, so right at the end of the season, we think he is on the level of a Simone Inzaghi or Gattuso? Because if you don't, think that, then I probably would make the switch. But that's just my opinion. I think if Paratici stays and Pirlo leaves and Allegri goes to Real Madrid, the most logical solution is Simone Inzaghi. He's been linked to the Juve job for a long time. I think Gattuso is a very intriguing outside pick here. And it's interesting that Gattuso and Simone Inzaghi could actually flip jobs. There's been some reports that Lazio are very interested in Gattuso and Napoli are considering Simone Inzaghi. So let's see how the Champions League race plays out this weekend. It does sound like Gattuso is definitely leaving Napoli. It does sound like Gattuso, although he did talk to Fiorentina and was kind of into it, now has second thoughts. But I think it's also because there are better jobs there. And I would say even just Lazio is a, I don't know if considerably better job than Fiorentina, but definitely a better job there. So it's going to be really interesting. Let's see what happens this weekend. But, you know, months ago, I had predicted that Pirlo was going to come back to Juve, and then I felt really horrible about that prediction, but maybe that's not so bad now. So let's see what happens there, but definitely very interesting. But I would challenge people when they think Gattuso, Simone Inzaghi, ask yourself how confident are you that this time next year, if Pirlo were to remain, he would be on the level of those managers. I gotta be honest, I'm not so sure he can do that. Okay, so now let's get to our friend Thousand Names. Crazy weekend in Serie A. We have Milan, Juve, and Napoli all competing for two spots. Long and short of it, Milan and Napoli control their destiny. If they both win, they are in. Doesn't matter what Juve does. If Juve wins, they need one of those two not to. There's a lot of other tiebreakers, but long and short of it, those are the two. And right now, Inter and Atalanta are the only two. So let's get to Thousand Names picks. I'll make mine, and then I'll be curious to see. Alex, at the end, I'll just ask you, who do you think gets in? Who do you think out of those three gets left out? So let's start with the first game, Atalanta-Milan. And let me just make a comment on Atalanta. Look, you know, a team with that payroll losing to Juve, you can, in a final, you can never really give them too much crap. But I genuinely believe that Atalanta, the past two seasons, there is a chance they are going to look back and said, you know what, we had a really great chance at a trophy. I think last season, they could have snuck in and won the Scudetto, which would have been unbelievable. And I think this season, they are going to regret it. They should have been able to beat Juve. So I don't want to give them too much crap. You guys know I love Atalanta, but that was really a missed opportunity. So now they host Milan. A lot at stake here. Thousand Names has Milan winning 3-1. Hat trick by Kessie against his former team and goal by Muriel. And he says Pioli is going to fly into the Champions League with three BS penalties. He says Gasperini is going to celebrate and dedicate the defeat to Pirlo, and that Gosens is going to step all over that Ronaldo jersey. If you remember that fun thing on Gosens and the Ronaldo jersey. In Italian, Atalanta Milan 1-3, Muriel tripletta di Cassi, Pioli vola in Champions con tre rigori inesistenti, Gasperini esulta e dedica la sconfitta a Pirlo, Gosens calpesta la maglia di Ronaldo. Okay, so Atalanta is in the Champions League. We know Gasperini used to coach Juve, probably doesn't hate Juve as much as other teams. He does have a thing of rubbing it in to Milan a little bit, and Milan fans really despise Gasperini. So this is really fascinating game right here. Atalanta, there is some motivation. You get more money if you finish in second place instead of third or fourth. Is it a big deal for Atalanta to say they finish second? Maybe. So I don't know. I'm going to go Milan win. And I'm going to tell you right now, I'm going to have Milan going to the Champions League over Juve this weekend. So I'm going to have Milan winning 1-0. And I'll give a goal to Rebic. So, yeah, I'm going to go with that. Then we're going to have Bologna-Juve, which was pretty funny because Mihailovic predicted who the referee would be for this match. So I'm sure there's a lot of people that had fun with that. I have to say, I thought it was pretty funny. Fauza, not surprisingly, has Bologna winning 2-1. Two goals by Palacio, goals by Ronaldo. He says Mihailovic is going to humiliate Pirlo and condemning him to the Europa League. He says Juve's transfer window was terrible, and without getting help from referees, they don't win. In Italian, Bologna, Juve 2-1, Palacio doppietta Ronaldo, Sinisa umilia Pirlo e lo condanna alla Europa League. Mercato ridicolo, senza furti non si vince. I'll have Juve winning, but again, they need both Napoli and Milan. They need at least one out of Napoli and Milan not to. So I'll have Juve 2-0, and I'll give two goals to Ronaldo. And by the way, I predict Ronaldo stays at Juve regardless of what happens with Europa Champions League. It's a combination that I just don't see any logical team willing to pay him those huge wages. There's also huge tax advantages for Ronaldo to stay in Italy because of the laws on foreign assets in the country. So I just don't know. I'm going to say it right now. I think Ronaldo's at Juve next season, regardless. Last one, Napoli Hellas 5-0. Osimhen, three goals, and then Insigne and Zielinski. He says Gattuso brings back Napoli to the Champions League despite De Laurentiis, and he shows his superiority to Pirlo. I definitely agree. I think Gattuso, at the end of their careers, coaching careers, we're going to have no doubt that Gattuso was the superior coach between the two. And then he says that if Allegri, and there is a lot of buzz in Naples on Allegri coming, they'll win the Scudetto next season. And actually, I'll tell you right now, if Napoli make the Champions League, I think next season they are a fascinating pick for the Scudetto. And we'll get into that next week. In Italian, Napoli Hellas 5-0. Osimhen tripletta, Insigne, Zielinski, Gattuso riporta al Napoli in Champions alla faccia di De Laurentiis, dimostrata la sua superiorità su Pirlo, se arriva Allegri e Scudetto l'anno prossimo. Yeah, I have Napoli winning this. Verona has absolutely nothing to play for. I'll have Napoli 2-0 and braced by Osimhen. Alex, what do you think? So as I laid it out, Milan and Napoli control their destiny with a win. Juve needs some help. Which of these three do you think gets left out?
Yeah, I just want to add that as a Chelsea fan, I do have my eye on this a little bit. And let me just quickly say why. So Milan, of course, have Fikayo Tomori, who I still assume is as good as gone. Like, I do assume he's just been so good for Milan that they're going to come to their senses no matter what, if they're in out of the Champions League. And I assume they will purchase him. But
I agree.
You know, I'm still inviting them to finish outside the Champions League. So the decision becomes a little bit harder. And I will say, and I don't even know if it's been reported publicly at all, but if Juve were to be on the outside looking in of the Champions League, just don't be surprised if you hear De Ligt's name in Chelsea. Just a little bit. Don't be surprised. So either way, if one of those teams is on the outside looking in, Chelsea might be perking the ears up regarding one of those center backs. So you've already spoken on the matchups. I mean, Atalanta and Milan is obviously a much more like even matchup than Bologna and Juve. And Napoli, of course, as you said, is hosting Verona. So I guess, like, on the surface, I would doubt Milan the most of the three just based on their matchup. But yeah. I don't know. I have to kind of not go with the status quo of what I was saying the first half of the season. That was, no, Juve are going to win the Scudetto. Juve are still going to win the Scudetto. I'm going with the status quo. Now, I've changed my mind on that one. Now the status quo is actually Milan remaining in the top four or a Champions League spot, and really Napoli doing that as well. So you know what, David? I'm going to say Juve are the team on the outside looking in. I really am. It just feels like that's what's supposed to happen at this point. So I just have to kind of go with that intuition.
I kind of agree. It does feel that way. But, you know, calcio is crazy. So we'll see what happens. And, yeah, look, I think you've been talking a lot about how Chelsea and Raiola have better relationship. I have a feeling center back will be something we hear a lot about Chelsea, regardless of Tomori. So, yeah, I'm sure we'll hear those rumors. I think Juve, though, to me, De Ligt, Chiesa, and we saw the flashes of Kulusevski. That's what they need to build on. But you're right. We will definitely hear a little bit about that, especially if they're out of the Champions League. So before we get to Marco Messina available to all, first of all, I want to thank Thousand Names. He's been absolutely awesome. We love having his picks. We'll have him on the show again very soon. Really want to thank him. He's really brought it, made the show better consistently. So I want to thank him. Now let's get to our patrons. As always, if you enjoy Calcioland, consider becoming a patron. Next week, we have Napoli Outsider coming back. We are going to recap the season, preview a little bit the summer. I genuinely think those chats are worth the subscription in and of itself. You'll also be supporting a great charity, the Insuperabili in Italy. They run football camps for kids with disabilities. They certainly need help right now with COVID. And you'll be joining a great community of fans who ask some really good questions. And I have to say today, they really brought it. So consider becoming a patron and supporting the show. So I'll tell you what, Alex, there's a lot of long ones at the end. So I'll have you kick us off with the first few through the first long Kevin one, and then I'll take us home.
Absolutely. All right, let's start off right here with Mr. Amir Elia. Amir writes, if Juve finishes in the top four after winning the Coppa and Supercoppa, if you are Pirlo and want to continue at Juve, would you accept being an assistant coach for the next coach or being the coach of the U23s, or do you just leave and try to be a first team coach at a mid to lower table Serie A club?
So I know Pirlo said after winning, and again, winning really cures everything. I really believe that. It's amazing how differently people look at things after you win a trophy. He said after that he'd like to coach and that he thinks he deserves to come back to Juve. Now, I've always questioned Pirlo's desire to be a coach. He famously said he never thought of himself as a coach when he was a player until, you know, he saw Conte at Juve. But they have just remarkably different. I mean, you couldn't have more different personalities between the two. So I got to be honest, I feel that, say, Pirlo sack, I don't see him being like Pippo Inzaghi, who was like, okay, I was given the Milan job, didn't work out, let me go in Serie B and kind of do that. I just don't see Pirlo doing it. Is it possible, like, let's say Juve brings back Allegri. Is it possible that Pirlo's like, oh, I'll be his assistant and kind of be groomed maybe for the job down the road? Maybe. But I don't know if any, I mean, I don't know. There's egos involved. I mean, I don't know if I would do it. So it depends. It really comes down to, does Pirlo see himself in 10 years as wanting to be a coach? And I just don't know. I don't think the under 23 is realistic. So I don't know. So long and short of it, Amir, I'm going to say no, despite what he said publicly. I think if he sacked, it also wouldn't surprise me if he just is like, that's it. I don't think he's going to leave the money on the table because he's on the contract for next season too and say, you know what, coaching isn't for me, I'm out. But I think if he's sacked, it wouldn't surprise me if we never see him on the sideline again.
Interesting. All right. Let's move on to Luigi Aloia. He writes, do you think Inter gets an agreement with Conte for next season, considering the financial issues adding to the stress of trying to keep this team together?
Thank you, Luigi. Been sending some excellent questions. A newer patron, welcome on board. Thank you so much. Yeah, I mean, he wrote this before the news of Oak Tree giving, and there's been different reports. There's reports that Oak Tree is a minority owner, and then there's reports that Oak Tree just gave Inter money and that they can eventually become the owners if they don't pay back the loan, which is essentially what Elliott Fund did with Milan. And I do think eventually, if you ask me, will Suning be Inter's owners 2-3 years from now? I would probably say the answer is likely no. But I do think this bridge loan, and Bernhard's going to get into that in the end of the segment, and I agree. In the short term, it keeps Inter together. And again, I've said it a million times, Inter, yeah, they are in a very bad financial situation. But they are really helped by the fact that because of COVID, everyone is. So A, they can't really suffer huge repercussions. And it's not like there's that many clubs with money that can take off their hands, their assets. So yeah, I genuinely believe Conte is coming back next season. You know, there's going to be pressure on him because now it's going to be like you have to at least get out of the group stage of the Champions League. And on one hand, you could say, well, if Conte left now, he absolutely leaves on top. But which team's going to hire him and pay him that $12 million after taxes that he's owned next season? I just don't see it. So I genuinely believe Conte's coming back next season at Inter. And I'll take it a step further. I think Inter, especially after the news of this, like I never felt Hakimi and Lukaku or Barella players like that were leaving. I think at most they lose one significant player. And I think Lautaro makes to me a lot more sense than Lukaku because he has a much lower amortized value. But it also wouldn't surprise me if they don't lose any key players and they just try to save costs. So long and short of it, Luigi, even before the oak tree thing, I genuinely believe Conte was coming back.
Okay, here's another one from Luigi. He says, also, one more question. Do you think Pirlo stays at Juve if they qualify for Champions League this weekend? Something tells me that this is now a possibility and not sure if this is a good idea, considering his stubbornness to have a proper coaching staff with experience.
Yeah, look, as I said, it's amazing how winning cures everything. And I actually, when you consider Juve's financial situation, look, I'll say this. If Juve qualifies for the Champions League and Allegri goes to Real Madrid, then I think the odds of Pirlo coming back are over 50%, probably closer to 70%. So for sure. Okay, Alex, I'm going to have you read the just one of the long Kevin ones, but let's just take them point by point. So after the first, we'll stop. I'm even curious to get your take on the first point, and then I'll take us home after that.
Sure. I see a certain player's name mentioned a lot that I said at the very beginning of the season would be a success in Serie A. So let's see. Here we go. Kevin writes, I have a theory. I wanted to see what you thought of it. I think you can argue Napoli benefited from some aspects of COVID to get and potentially keep Osimhen. So here's the first point here. The purchase of Osimhen was the biggest of last summer, and based on reporting at the time, I think if other Premier League clubs had more money, or if Chelsea had preferred Osimhen to Timo Werner, he would not have come to Napoli.
Man, I'll tell you, man, if Chelsea had Osimhen instead of Werner, oh my God, oh my God. Okay, so this is great. And by the way, Kevin, I really appreciate it. You always send some really thoughtful questions, and this is really excellent. So would Napoli have been able to buy, basically the question is, without COVID, would Napoli have been able to buy Osimhen? Superb question. So Napoli in Serie A, Napoli and Lazio are the only two teams that basically don't have a debt. They really weren't that hurt from COVID. Sure, they didn't have as many revenues, but Napoli and Lazio, they were okay because of it. And I have to say, I remember last summer, all the people that were reporting, oh, Napoli's getting awesome, and this means they are selling Koulibaly. And I was like, well, that may happen, but trust me, that's not necessarily related. I didn't see anyone post a retraction on that, by the way. But in any event, I think this is a very good point. Had there not been COVID, could maybe other teams outbid Napoli for awesome? And it's absolutely possible. And if you remember that negotiation, it took a while, because it did feel like, you know, maybe Osimhen's camp was trying to see if a big Premier League club would make an offer. So I think that's a great point. You think Chelsea were ever in on him at all, Alex? And I got to tell you, I know I see your tweets on Werner. Man, if you had Osimhen, Chelsea would just be absolutely unstoppable right now.
Yeah, my tweets on Werner are like in the moment tweets. Like, I like the guy. He's just infuriating, like absolutely infuriating. But it's a real love-hate. Like for 80 minutes, he'll make you pull your hair out. And then by the end of the game, he just by chance has done something important. But I mean, David, I literally was thinking of this right this moment. And I don't mean to at all make it about Chelsea. It's just a general question. We all know Chelsea want a striker, right? You tweeted last night about, hey, if you want Lukaku, maybe now you're a bit more disappointed because of Inter's now new extra owners or whatever. So we all know Chelsea want a striker. Haaland, Lewandowski, Kane, Lukaku, they just want a striker. What does that say about Timo Werner in year one? You know what I mean? So now getting to Osimhen, and would we want a striker as much if we had Osimhen this past season? I'm not sure, but I did say that Osimhen was going to be a nice acquisition for Napoli and that it might take him a little bit of time to get revved up, but that Napoli had a really good player there because Chelsea had faced Osimhen against Lille last year in the Champions League, and it was pretty clear, man, this guy's good. So I do think Chelsea were interested, for sure. I mean, David, you know this. Like, teams can have interest in so many players.
Yeah,
it's just how far do they go with that interest, right? Like, we don't even know where they are on, say, their big board. Like, are they option 1, 2, 3, 7? Who knows? Like, you do due diligence on a lot of players. But they definitely had some level of interest in Osimhen. And, I mean, Werner was clearly higher up because of the pedigree, but that's not always the greatest reason as to why someone should be higher up. You should look a bit more at fit. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. Osimhen took a little while to get started in Serie A, right? So that could have happened in the Premier League as well. And then if you take a little while to get started up in the Premier League, I mean, you might not live to see the middle of the season. So hey, I just am really happy that obviously he's done well at Napoli. I can't really forecast how much better he would have been than Werner in year one. But listen, David, I'm going to be a bit of a hypocrite here. Everything I've said about Timo Werner goes totally out the window if we win the Champions League final. So let's move on to the second point from Kevin. He says, it came out in the press that Osimhen was hesitant in a way about Serie A due to issues of racism. Had there been fans in the stadiums this season, I think he would have had a more of a target on him from some of these racist fans due to this. No fans for a full season, and his debut season, let's be real, allowed him to settle in and potentially appreciate the city and the league without this horrible distraction.
Wow. Kevin, man, coming through, man. We could have done a whole pod just on this. Great stuff. Okay, I think this is a very, very shrewd point. The only thing I will say is that you can also flip it. Look at how much Koulibaly loves Napoli, the city, because of how they rally around him when there's racist stuff. So, but again, not everyone's the same. You know, some people could be like, F this. I have these people, you know, saying these horrible things. Yeah, great, my city's rallying for me, but F this, I'm out of here. So it also depends on that. The other thing that I will say, and again, I could be way off, could maybe those reports that he was doubts on Serie A because of the racism, because he wanted to wait and see if a better offer came from Liverpool or Chelsea, maybe. But again, everyone's different. And if truly that was the reason, I certainly respect. And, you know, while I can't fully understand, because that's not an experience that I experience, but yeah, I totally get that. So interesting point there. So yeah, it could have been very different with fans in the stand. And I think Kevin raises such a good point that we almost forget about this dark side of Italian football. I'd be curious to see with fans coming back. So one more from Kevin on this point.
Yeah. And I will say, when you're giving Kevin credit for the point, but then just giving the quick reference to Koulibaly and how he actually loves how they rally behind him during racism, maybe it's a bit different for a striker, right? And it shouldn't be, obviously. I mean, there should be no racism at all. But people get really in the moment when a striker misses a big chance, whereas Koulibaly's a center back. So I feel like strikers, just no matter what, I'm not even talking about racism, but strikers probably get, like, just look at my tweets, right? I don't go over the line on Timo Werner, but like, strikers always get those really reactionary replies from fans because they're the one at the end of the day who didn't score for you. So Kevin really makes a decent point there. All right, the third one. He writes, if he has a huge year next year, it will be difficult for other teams to purchase him from Napoli as they may not have the funds and ADL won't want to sell unless for a big plus Valenza. Will also give him more incentive if the team is doing well and if he enjoys the city. and I'm hoping if he lives up to his potential, we can keep him for longer than Cavani or Higuain, who were both here for just three seasons. So he just ends. He says, what do you think of this theory? Do you think this was an underrated aspect of Napoli's COVID finances, or am I overrating this?
No, well, look, I think, Kevin, on so much of this, I mean, look, it's very possible that he's spot on literally all of this. I just offer some alternatives, but I think he's making a ton of sense here. Now, I will say this. If you ask me, is 3 years from now, so is Osimhen going to start a fourth season at Napoli? I would say it's more likely than not that he won't. And I say that because, you know, there's not that many great number nines out there right now. And look, things could change in 2 years or whatnot. And look, you know, as much as Napoli, and look, they've been able to retain some players like Koulibaly, but we mentioned Cavani, Higuain, even Lavezzi. I think you made a great point, Alex, on strikers, like the sexiness of the position, the reactions that come with that, but also on the market. Keep in mind, though, another thing that's interesting that we learned from Napoli Outsider is the way Napoli does amortization. They actually put most of it at the front. So even last summer, Lozano is coming off a really bad season because they had done that quick amortization at the top more. It was conceivable that they could move on from him. But Kevin's right. I don't think anyone this summer, look, you know, could Chelsea be like, yeah, you know what, the Haaland, like that doesn't work out for us or whatnot. Could they try to blow Napoli out of the water? It's possible. But I think Osimhen, I'm pretty confident he'll be back on Napoli next season. And then after that, we'll see. So great, great stuff, Kevin. I really appreciate your questions. He has one more. Do you think is essential for a Fantasista to play between the lines? No, as we talked with Francesco on that podcast, I do think that position have evolved. Like I consider Insigne, you know, a Fantasista, but he's more on the winger side. And then he asked, do I consider De Paul a Fantasista? Probably not. I feel like De Paul's just an incredibly complete midfielder, Balga or Papu Gomez. Yeah, I could see that. I could consider both of them. Like Balga more of a winger, but a lot of these Fantasisti move there. And Papu Gomez, absolutely. Same with Ilicic. If I have to pick one right now, it would be Ilicic. Then Dieter, what will Inter do with Eddie Salcedo, the coming transfer window? I don't see them doing a Pinamonti 2.0, Salcedo just being at Inter to never play. Look, he's 19 years old, turned 20 in October. He scored 2 goals, 21 matches for Verona. Inter and Verona have a great relationship. I have a feeling Salcedo just ends up staying there. And then he asked, will Gasperini be the Alex Ferguson staying at Atalanta for a decade? Yeah, I actually think that's pretty conceivable. Yeah, I do. I think he's probably already the longest tenured coach at his club now in Serie A. And look, you know, anything over 5 years in Serie A is an eternity for a coach. But I think him and Atalanta really do have a very good relationship, and it works so well with one another. Then Kevin, thanks, David, for all the great content. It was great to have Calcio and through COVID. Thank you, Kevin. Hopefully everyone enjoys the last weekend, not only with exciting battles in Serie A, but Liga and La Liga. Who needs a Super League? Yeah. So, Kevin, thank you so much and to all the listeners for your engagement during this season. Then another great question from Jesse. Do you think the league stopped randomly assigning referees because of the final table? In the 84-85 season, Verona was first and Torino was second. Absolutely, that's why they did it. I was very young when that happened. I mean, I have some vague memories of Verona winning the Scudetto. It's not a coincidence. Back then, it was totally random. Like, you could have the most inexperienced referee going to do the biggest match. And, you know, I'm sure a lot of people would, in some ways, would say it's fairer that way. But yeah, I think if you wanted to be cynical and say that that's the reason why they changed it, I think you will be right. And then he says, how much do you feel handpicking referees skews the league table? Well, I will say this. If you wanted to guarantee that Juve's in the Champions League with the referee designations, why would you wait till the last game? Why? So that would be my counter to that. But again, you know, I guess recently, especially, there's a lot of reasons to feel cynical about it. But again, my comeback would be if the league wanted to make sure that Juve is in the Champions League next season, I genuinely don't think they would have waited till the last match of the season and Juve not even controlling their destiny. I think that's kind of ludicrous to think that way, to be honest. Okay, next up, Bernhard. Since we know he's going down to Serie B and we also know the final spot for promotion will be decided between Venezia and Cittadella, two clubs from Veneto where you have your special relationship. I think Venezia would be a better fit for the league. Never had a great team, but at least the city is world famous and Cittadella would be the smallest ever to be promoted into Serie A. Yeah, you know, it's interesting. When I was growing up, you know, Cittadella was, you know, we didn't even really consider them like a real club. And then they changed their name to Cittadella Padova at one point to kind of attract that. I know some of my friends growing up that I played with that were good, but not good enough to go play for the Allievi and the Primavera and Padova went to Cittadella. But I agree with Bernhard. I think for the league, it's better that it be Venezia. I mean, can you imagine a Monday night game in Serie A between Spezia and Cittadella? I mean, I'd feel bad for our friends at CBS. Not that I don't like those teams, but, you know, that's exactly the poster child for this is why we need a Super League, a match like that. And look, Venice is a worldwide city, world-known city. We've seen a lot of these American owners trying to buy the teams in cities like that. So, yeah, I agree with Bernhard. It will be better for Senia. And then Bernhard has some comments on the Oak Tree refinancing deal. So I'll tell you what, we're going to bring Bernhard back hopefully next week to talk a little bit about this. So then he asks, you know, and then I agree with him that it ensures Inter is going to have be able to maintain at least for this season. There are rumors that they're going to try to shed some salaries. Nainggolan's going to stay at Cagliari. Gian Mario's not going to come back. They'll try to shed Vidal. I'm curious to see what happens with that. But long and short of it, I do agree with Bernhard and the two positions they need to look at, I totally agree, are keeper and left wing back. Assuming you keep the rest of the team, you're in really great shape there. So Bernhard, we'll bring you back next week to talk about that if you're available. Then one more from Bernhard, looking back the past two seasons and bearing in mind your comment about the strong Napoli and Roma. Back as the most competitive team besides Juve, let me challenge you on this. Since the 2011-12 season, Milan and Inter took a deep dive into the sewers. Inter obviously came back already, but maxed out of the Champions League in 2018-19. Last season, the development was obvious. This season, it was undeniable. I want to challenge you because if in this season had a weaker Juve, but therefore was blessed with great teams like a good Lazio side, but I would say not as good as last season. Good Napoli, although they had a lot of injuries. Good Milan, great Atalanta, and still a good Juve with someone on the right on their side. The race was broader when Napoli would close. It was a two-horse race with Inter having more a good start. Not because the rest was so bad and the rest down. This clearly changed to the good of the league in recent years. Would love to hear your take. So look, you know, I think the fact that Juve dominated the league for as long as they did is certainly tied to the decline of Milan and Inter. Because look, all these other clubs, Atalanta, Lazio, even Napoli, they just don't have the revenues. They just don't have the brand recognition of those clubs. So it's very hard for them to sustain success long-term. They have to be managed really well. So yeah, I mean, look, if Milan can keep improving and Inter with this refinancing, we could be in for, and Napoli, I think, going to be really good. I'll say it right now. If you put a gun to my head based on what we know today, I mean, we don't know who Napoli's coach is. So that's a pretty big variable. But squad-wise, I think they are the most likely to compete with Inter next season. And I think Juve will be better. Atalanta, I think, will be solid. So, yeah, I agree. I think we're poised for the league to be really strong. And then we'll close with Derek, my good buddy. What does PGC do to improve VAR? While the perceived legitimacy of referee calls during a match, this past Inter-Juve match was not only a bad look for the refs of Serie A, but also for the VAR system that was supposed to help referees make decisions with integrity during the match. Totally agree, Derek. As I said, Tuesday, VAR ended up just bringing a whole other new layer of conspiracy theories to Serie A. Not really, not much else. I said it last time. I think they need to do two things. Give a challenge, two challenges to each manager like they have in the NFL. Have a centralized location for the review of VAR. Not at the stadium, and just have someone in charge of that to be consistent and try to make it more transparent, because I think right now the way it's done just creates more confusion. So thank you guys. That was a great patron segment. I really appreciate it. Next week we'll have Napoli outsider, so we'll be pretty great. And now here's our good friend Marco Messina to close it out. Oh, I'm so happy to be joined by my dear friend Marco Messina. Before we started recording, I was just remembering when about the first time we met in person, which was when Pirlo played a game for New York City FC, which is kind of perfect timing for this. Marco really needs no introduction on any Calcio podcast. He's the founder of Italian Football TV. They do a fantastic job on so many different platforms. And this year, Marco, you know, realized one of his dreams. You know, Marco has a lot of passion for all of Italian football, but Juve in particular. And it's awesome to see him be a host, along with my friend Beppe over on Twitch for Juve, their official channel. So it's fantastic. So Marco, it's always a real pleasure to chat with you, my friend. Bentornato to Calcioland.
Oh man, no, it's always, thank you so much for having me. It's always an amazing feeling. I still think back to the early days of Twitter, where I always looked up to you. You were really the guy that helped pave the way for so many of us, honestly. So the thank you goes to you, for real.
Oh, wow. That's very, very kind of you. So let's start here. As I mentioned, we met in person when Pirlo played for New York City FC yesterday, and we're recording this Thursday morning, so the day after Juve won against Atalanta. I have to say, I thought especially the second half was maybe as good a game as I've seen from Juve this season. I wasn't so sure they had this in them. So were you surprised by how well they played yesterday?
Yeah, I agree with you. I thought they finally had some intensity, which is something that was definitely lacking for a while from this Juve. You know, I did think their performance was really good. I will say I wasn't too surprised. I predicted a 2-0. I was expecting a response. I think that was the key to this. And one of the other points, too, is, you know, I think there's a lot of players in the team who have won something. And when it comes to a final and it comes to that one-off match, you know, it doesn't take really much motivation to really get you going. So I expected them to win the match, but I didn't expect them to put in such a good performance as they did. And I was really happy with that. I thought they looked good. And it seemed like the team was really happy. A good birthday present for Andrea.
For sure. Yeah. So let me ask you this. And I posed this on Twitter yesterday because I was very curious to see the reaction. Because, I, you know, winning really in a lot of ways cures everything. And granted, you know, it's a Coppa Italia, not maybe the biggest trophy, especially at the start of the season. But, you know, it's still a trophy, and you could tell people were very happy for good reason. So let me ask you this. After this performance, and if Juve somehow sneak into a Champions League spot, would you be open to the idea of Pirlo coming back, especially if Allegri's off the market and goes to Real Madrid? And what do you think most of the fan base would look at it if that were to happen?
David, it's so true that winning cures everything, because, you know, one day you could go from everyone wants Pirlo out, the next morning, you know, you start doing calculations in your head and you say, oh, if they get Champions League, you know, maybe he could do well. You know, things went wrong this season. We had injuries, you know, young team, this and that. I think what you said is the right call, though, the right perspective. You have to, I know as fans, oftentimes we think about what we want, but we don't often think about, all right, what's the alternative? So,
yeah,
sack Andrea Pirlo. Who's available? Who's actually, you know, if Allegri goes to Real Madrid, Zidane goes to France, is Mihailovic that big of an upgrade? Would you rather just keep Andrea Pirlo? You know, just to, you know, think about the other names that are in consideration. So I think that, you know, it definitely becomes interesting if they do get to Champions League. I think more so the way the season went is more disappointing than not winning, because a lot of fans, and at least me going into the season, I expected Inter to win the Scudetto with Conte. I think they have a better team. They have a better coach. They were more organized. They were by far, for me, the best team in Serie A.
I agree.
But I don't think we expected it to be like this. We didn't expect them to lose the league in this kind of fashion. But, you know, I think that it can be. I think it can be. You know, we'll see what happens in the summer. If they get Champions League, honestly, I could see them keeping Pirlo, especially if the alternative of Allegri and Zidane is off the table. I don't think it's that exciting to go for, you know, a different name that might not really create something that's much better than what Pirlo has done.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's always about the alternatives. I guess to me, it really comes down to if you believe Pirlo can be a pretty good coach someday. But in general, I totally agree with your
way. What do you think?
I don't know. I always found it very odd that, because I know you've probably spent even more time with him than I did. He never struck me as someone that had the personality for it. So I don't know. Mm-hmm. But look, he's had glimpses, and there's been, look, yesterday I thought tactically he did really well. I mean, Gasperini usually does not get his lunch money stolen like that on national TV, and he did. So yeah, I think it comes, that to me would be the other thing. If you're a person thinking about this, to me, you're right. You have to consider what are the alternatives. And then after, you also have to ask yourself, okay, a year from now, is he going to be a lot better with that? Mm. But let's talk a little bit about the players, because I thought yesterday what was encouraging is the fact that De Ligt, although it was a little bit of a shaky start, I thought played really well against Zapata. Chiesa was the man of the match, scored the game winner, and I thought that was Kulusevski's best game at Juve, except for maybe right at the beginning when he got off to a fast start and then fell apart. So to me, those are like three core guys that Juve can build around in the future. Do you agree those are the building blocks? And when you look at the squad, is there anyone else that you're like, you know what, this is a player that can grow along these three?
No, I definitely agree. And I think that, you know, looking back towards the summer, I didn't like the buying of Chiesa and Kulusevski together. I always thought one ruled out the other. And while Kulusevski started really well and then Chiesa developed, Kulusevski's had to, you know, move his position a little bit. We've seen him play almost as a striker at times, you know, when Juve had different injuries. And I do agree that yesterday he was a great player. You know, I think we have to remember sometimes that these guys are so young. You know, they're in their early 20s, moving to Juventus in a situation that's not the greatest. So it takes time for them to develop. And we can look at other countries who give their young boys a little bit more time. Like, think about when De Ligt first signed, you know, there were people questioning him. And you know, given the time to develop, I think that these guys, they have the talent. They have everything at their foundation to do well. The other guy that I would say, and I know I'm biased. I'm definitely biased on this one. But I throw my boy McKennie in there. I've loved his intensity. I loved how he came in. Like, people were counting him out right when he signed. You know, they said, oh, he's a marketing move. He's just getting signed because he's American, this and that. But for me, tactically, he's played a very important part into the team.
Look, I thought, especially at first, he got off to a great start. And recently, we've seen some flashes of him. And you're right, he's the right age. I want to ask you about Buffon, because I thought it was fascinating. Obviously, yesterday was a great way for him to go out at Juve. And I have to say, I'm not sure if it's a coincidence that some of Juve's best games this season were with Buffon starting. And I love Szczesny. I think he's a superb keeper. I don't think it was a particularly great season for him. But I have to say, Juve, I don't think it's a coincidence that they played so well yesterday with Buffon there. So let me ask you this. Do you agree on his impact? And do you look at him any differently since he came back to Juve and is leaving again? It doesn't sound like he'll retire. In an ideal world, would you have preferred he had just retired altogether before he went to PSG? Or have you enjoyed this kind of version 2.0 at Juve?
Yeah, so on the first part, I totally agree. I think that Buffon, while, you know, he still looks like it's pretty ridiculous to even think that he's 43 years old. And I know, you know, that whole big stat was going around that in 1999, he won with Chiesa's father, Enrico Chiesa, and now with the son. But for me, he's so vocal as a keeper, and that's important in the defense. And I think that's one thing that he's had over Chesney, and he's provided some stability in a rocky season when you have that voice behind you that's helping you and guiding you and teaching you the ways for some of the defenders and organizing his defense. I think that helps. And I think that it's 14 games with him that Juve didn't lose. So I love Buffon. I'll never speak bad about him in terms of that. And in terms of, you know, leaving PSG, of course, for me, in an ideal world, we would have never let Buffon go. That's just, you know, I felt that way before he left PSG. I thought that he still had a lot to give. And I was really happy when he came back. I don't fault a player. Every player has to make their own decisions. Not every player is the same. And a guy like Buffon, in my opinion, he's a champion on the inside. So for him, I really respect that he went to PSG. And I know Juve fans, it's not the popular opinion. I know that they say, oh, you know, you shouldn't have went to PSG, playing in Champions League, could be a rival, blah, blah, blah. But for me, as a competitor, as a person that wants to play at the highest level, he respected the game so much that he said, I'm not going to go make a payday, you know, in a country that's playing in a league that's not as competitive. I want to respect myself. I want to respect my career. And I want to play at the highest level because I think I can. Even when people doubted him, he still believed in himself and he did that. And that's just something that's on the inside. I'm not faulting the players that go to other leagues and make the money. I'm not. But I'm just saying it's, you know, it's just different. Everybody has to make their own decision, and I don't fault them at all for doing that.
Yeah, fair. So let's talk a little bit about Ronaldo. Obviously, a ton has been made about him, you know, the huge cost and, you know, the results. You know, I think on the day he signed, if I told you this is how it's going to play out, you would maybe say that sounds as worst case scenario as it's going to get. And we know the financial crisis, the enormous cost that that Juve has with him. But on the other hand, he scores a ton of goals. And you look at Juve's squad, you know, I was observing yesterday how they really lack a player like Malinowski, a midfielder who can put up so many goals. And Morata had gotten off to a good start, not so much now. There's uncertainty on Dybala and Kulusevski, you know, and very encouraging yesterday, but didn't live up to expectations. So if I look at the situation, I'm like, yeah, I could see some advantages if Juve can get rid of this huge salary that comes with it. But then that production, they would really be lacking. So what do you make about that situation? Let's say Juve finds a way for Ronaldo to go to the team that he goes to. Do you see any scenario where they can come close to replacing that offensive production that he puts up?
I mean, the guy scored, 29 goals in Serie A, 30 goals in Serie A? That's so hard to make up for me. And I know, you know, we could take the wage into consideration, but how do you find a guy that's going to, you know, almost guarantee you at least 20 goals, 25 plus goals? It's not easy at all. And I know, you know, recently he hasn't been in the greatest of form, you could say. You know, I think yesterday the show hasn't been all about Ronaldo recently. For me, I mean, a lot will depend, in my opinion, on if Juve make Champions League. I can't see Ronaldo staying in a Europa, playing in Europa League. I mean, I just don't think that'll happen. There is also, you know, the other side that you say, okay, but what other team can fork up the money to buy him? I would keep him. I would keep him if it's me. It will depend, I think, a lot on the Champions League, if you qualify for Champions League. And you know the finances better than I do, David. I'm not good at that. But I don't know what team would be able to pay those wages and then pay his fee.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's the thing. I always tell people, it's easy to say, let's get rid of Ronaldo and we can spend that money better. But you're right. Who is going to take him? There's really no logical landing spot that I can see. But you're absolutely right. That production, too, it can be taken for granted. I mean, that's just absurd that he scored as many goals as he has. So let's talk a little bit about Dybala, obviously another key player at Juve, has 1 year left on his deal. What is your gut feeling on Dybala? Do you think he will be on Juve next season? And would you want him to be at Juve next season?
Yeah, I love Dybala. I mean, I'm a big fan of just like raw, talented players.
Yeah.
Guys who just like, you know, they you could tell that Dybala, when he's got the ball on his feet, he was made to play football. He was just made, you know, he's got that aspect to him. I keep Dybala, if it's me. He hasn't had a great season, you know, to be fair. He's been also unlucky, you know, with injuries and the way that he's
COVID,
been. COVID, you know, it hasn't been easy for him. I do think, again, you know, there are concerns, and if Juve are not in Champions League, like, things can, I don't know what's going to happen, how they'll be able to handle all this, and what players will want to stay and what players will want to go. In my ideal world, I look back to last season where Ronaldo and Dybala together were one of the best duos in Europe in terms of goals and assists together. It was up there. I don't remember what number they were. I think they were behind Lukaku, Lautaro, and behind Lewandowski, maybe third or fourth. I still see the value there. And I think that if you did build a team around them, you know, give them some midfielders, like kind of like you said, like Malinowski, who could bring that play forward, who could provide shot, who could open space, that it would finally flourish. It's unfortunate that we haven't seen it up to, you know, up to this point. But I love the image, by the way, yesterday of Firlo and Dybala after the goal.
Yeah.
Gave a kiss. I loved it.
Yeah, for sure. That was a great image, to say the least. So let's talk a little bit about the Juve jersey. I have to say, I really, really like the new kit. It goes to show it really shouldn't be hard to make a nice Juve jersey. So what do you make of it, and what has been the reaction? Of course, you are one of the hosts on Twitch for Juve, so you're very close to this. Do you think the reaction has been overall positive?
Yeah, David, I've been with you too. And I'm often, and people know this, like, I've often been very critical of the Juve jersey in recent years. I love the stripes. For me, it kind of looks like a classic jersey. It gives me like that early 2000s vibe to it. So I really like it. I'm a big fan. And like I said, I've been critical of the jersey in the past, how it's looked, but I like it. People have loved it. Like you said, I think that it's refreshing for a lot of Juve fans to kind of go back to like the roots, if you'd say. There's a lot of cool details, obviously, like honoring the 10 years at home at the Allianz Stadium. And even like on the black stripes, there's even like the little, there's stars around it to signify all the stars that go around the stadium. So it's really cool. I love it. It looks classic. And I'm a big fan of these retro type jerseys too. So kind of gives a best of both worlds.
For sure. Okay. So, Marco, let's talk a little bit about your great projects. As I mentioned, we've known each other a very long time, Italian Football TV. I mean, I think you guys really have done such a great job getting such a different audience into calcio that wouldn't have been into it. So I really commend you for it. You guys are always looking for new ways. The podcast is fantastic. The merch is incredibly popular. You've launched a great figure like Antonio. So the next thing, though, is the partnership with Campobasso. So let's start there. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's really cool. We were introduced to Matt Rizzetta, who had been following our stuff for quite some time, in the end of 2020. And basically, he comes from an immigrant family, similar to a lot of people, similar to me, where his family was mostly born in Italy. And he really wanted to make a name for himself. And he started his company, North 6 Agency, and, you know, became like top 50 PR companies in the United States. And he wanted to give it his, you know, he talked about, you know, he was telling me about his grandpa, how he grew up watching calcio, and he wanted to buy a team. So he invested in this region, the Molise region, and then his team Campobasso, which has such an incredible story. And I remember when, you know, he came by the studio, and, you know, we had just talked to just film a podcast or something, and he was telling me this story, and I was like, this is really incredible. So they're building a club to really represent immigrants and represent this underdog story. And we formed a partnership to try to spread that story all across social media, and people have loved it so far.
Yeah, excellent. So next week, I'm looking forward to finally seeing you again in person. Tell us a little bit about the original series, Underdogs, and what can people expect next week?
Yeah. So we're creating this documentary series called Underdogs with the team, following their journey, honestly, telling their story. And, you know, the team's on the verge of getting promoted to Serie C. They've been amazing in Serie D. They're really playing out of their league, to be honest. Like, they're a really good team. They've just been hit with, like, financial irregularities. That's why they've gone to D, like many teams, like many Italian teams that we know. So we're following that journey. We're following that journey. And episode one gets released May 26th on our YouTube channel. And it really just provides the backstory of Matt, of why he's investing into this club, why he's investing into this region. And then for episode two, we're getting ready. We're organizing the dates to go to Italy. and film the promotion and film the team celebrating. They need only a few more points to officially get promoted, and we want to be on the ground when that happens.
Wow, that's awesome. Well, Marco, I'm really thrilled to have seen your journey up close. Really, really great stuff. Now, I won't say that I hope Padova and Campobasso play each other next season because Padova can still make it to Serie B, but if we don't, that'll be a fun derby, and I really look forward to seeing you next week. Keep up the amazing work at Italian Football TV, and thanks so much for joining me today.
Anytime, David. Thank you.